This week on Developer Weekly.
And it's always bad day that I have to send out, let's say, 900 session refusals.
Welcome to another episode of Developer Weekly. This week, I'm talking with Jill Kleren about creating community meetups and an incredible tech conference. Jill is a Microsoft Regional Director, MVP, and Pluralsight author. He also founded Techorama, which is the biggest IT conference in Belgium and the Netherlands. Welcome, Jill. How are you doing today?
Hi, Barry. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. I'm very good. Thank you very much. You know, I think it's going slightly better here in the Netherlands, COVID-wise, than in Belgium. I think you guys are closing down a little bit more.
We are indeed closing down again. So all the initial plans that I was making already for the fall are, pretty much out of sight again. So I don't think lots of these will actually be able to go through. So, yeah, we're not doing that well at this point.
Well, you know, we just have to live with this stuff, and it's going to be a while, I guess.
I think so, too. Yeah. I
don't think it will definitely get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, but it will get better at some point. I think we can be
absolutely
resting assured about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw that the Russians are coming with a vaccine in October, I think. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that's actually true.
Yeah, let's all
enjoy that.
Let's hope we have several ones that we can choose from. So I'm not sure which one I'll choose then, but as soon as there will be one, I think I'll be the first in line to actually be able to go out in a normal way again and going to customers and stuff. Because I like the working from home, but there's something that says that you've been inside too much and not traveling for too long. So that is really bothering me at this point. I think that's the thing I miss mostly. So I do a lot of traveling just like you, and that's probably the thing I miss most, because normally I'm away from home 1 or 2 weeks a month, and now that's been reduced to zero. So that is starting to hurt, really. So
first world problems.
It is a first world problem, but you're used to it. So in the meantime, you're already used to sitting in, but there's not a lot of change between the days. A Monday, a Tuesday, a Sunday, it's all pretty much the same now. So that's what I miss most. There's nothing really to look forward to, so that's I think what a lot of people in our situation really have at this point.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Oh well, we're still pretty lucky, I guess, because we can work from home a lot as well.
Indeed.
Because we do all of our stuff digital, so we'll count our blessings.
Indeed, I think we complain, but I think a lot of people are in a much worse situation than we are. So for us, there's not that much of a change in terms of what we can do and the work we can actually still do for the customers. That's indeed a big plus.
All right. So before we get into Techorama and community stuff, I want to talk about you for a bit. So how did you first get started in technology?
So I graduated nearly 20 years ago now. So next year it'll be 20 years that I'm working. So I started at a pretty difficult time. 2003, so it's only I'm only 17 years, so I'm younger than I was thinking. So anyway, so it's 17 years that I've been working, and so and that was still a pretty difficult time, but that was 2003, so we were not that far away from 9/11, and the dot-com bubble was also still pretty recent. So there's a lot of people that graduated together with me and had a hard time getting into tech and had a hard time getting that first job. I got lucky. I started as an intern at a small company. Got the first job there for about, 1.5 years. By then it started to get better again. And I immediately started in Microsoft technology, because at school I was already doing .NET. And the official curriculum was Java. But I think in the second or the third year, I started doing .NET on my own. And that's how I also got in contact with people from Microsoft at the time. I don't think the MSP program already existed, but I got some internal contacts at Microsoft, and that's also how I got my first internship, also my internship in Microsoft technology, and yeah, never looked back basically. So that's that was pretty much coinciding with .NET. .NET, the first releases of .NET 2001, I started out with it. So yeah, that and basically I've never looked back, started doing .NET and have been doing .NET for 17, 18 years now. So that's basically the my world, and has been my world, and I think it will always remain my world. Yeah. And yeah, so initially I started doing ASP.NET, so WinForms. Yeah, we didn't have a lot of other things at the time.
Yeah.
So it was still pretty concise. I remember at the time I was telling that to someone the other day. At that point, I had the MSDN library printed out in some books. So that's how limited it was at that point. So we had WinForms and WebForms. That's all we had. And so I made the entire evolution. Basically, I've been doing consultancy for my entire career. That's also how I got in contact with lots of interesting projects, because I could hop from one project to the other pretty much, and started because we're here to talk about community as well, not just about me. I started getting involved in the community already pretty early. I think after I was working like 2-3 years. I got to hear that there was a couple of people here in Belgium thinking of starting a user group, and so that's basically my that has been my entry, let's say, into community. And that's now 15 years ago or something, so that's also already quite a long time ago.
Wow, back then they started the community already. That is a long time ago.
Yeah,
it must be one of the first communities.
It was actually the first user group initiative like I said, I was also still pretty young in the field, but it pretty much, I think it was really one of the first user groups that definitely around the Microsoft stack in any case was created. There was a couple of people from Microsoft involved here in Belgium, so from the local sub. And then my colleague and partner in crime, Peter Geissens, he actually started it, and I joined like a couple of months after. The first thing I did was building the website for the user group, and then I basically got involved more and more and started organizing the events. And so I think we've been running the user group now for, I think it's 2005 or 2006, so it's 14 or 15 years that we've been running the user group. Yeah.
And this is then the VSUG user group.
Yeah, the Visual Studio user group. Yeah.
And, wow, and that's still around today.
That is still around today. Yeah, that is still active. Apart from this year, which has been special, the user group runs an event pretty much every month. Usually an in-person event. And has been doing that for so many years. Has been, I think on the mailing list there's about a couple thousand people, 3-4 thousand people. It's also a user group that has been lucky enough to always have quite a few companies that help out with sponsorship and a venue for events and stuff like that. So it's been still going well. So it's an old user group.
That is very impressive. How have you seen the user group change over the years? Did you see, for instance, the audience change a lot?
Yeah, it's something that the audience is an interesting one. So Peter and I, and so my wife is now also involved. So my wife also now helps out, and she actually does a lot of the management of the user group now, because I'm more involved with my own company and Techorama. But it's something that we discussed not too long ago. We said, there's a couple of people that I think have been coming for 15 years or close to 15 years, and some faces are really familiar. Some people have changed. And there's definitely a younger generation, although I think it's less of a group of young people than I would hope so. There's definitely less young people that seems to be I don't know, are they less interested in going to sessions after the working hours? I don't know. It's something that strikes me that our audience also seems to be getting a little bit older, and there's not a lot of influx, let's say, of younger people. Are they more going to meetups? I don't know. We don't do stuff via meetup. We typically do everything still via our own website. So I'm not sure if that is really part of the issue, let's say. But yeah, I don't see a lot of fresh faces. I see fresh faces, but I would like to see more. And it's not always easy to figure out how you can reach those people. So we're doing a couple of things together also with Microsoft, but it's not easy to actually get people, yeah, new people, to get them excited, let's say, to get them, yeah, to come to user groups.
We saw the same thing with .NET South, mm-hmm, which was a user group in the Netherlands that we, yeah, have. And also a lot of older people that attend there. And it was very hard to reach the younger crowd. Mm-hmm. And we were actually thinking that maybe that was because of the way we ran our social media, our yeah, marketing around the thing. Because we run the social media like we want to see it, as in via Twitter and email and LinkedIn, which are basically the channels. But those might be the channels that older people might be on. Maybe we should be like on Snapchat or Facebook TikTok, or whatever.
TikTok. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, like I said, it's difficult to figure out how to reach young people. And if you think about it, the other day it was in the news here in Belgium that the government, probably they're doing that in the Netherlands as well, where you live, that the government is now also making advertisements on those channels, TikTok and I don't know what else it was, yeah, to actually reach people to wear a mask on the street, to reach that younger generation. So maybe that's indeed, maybe we should hire some social marketing expert or something that can help us a bit better. Because I'm not following TikTok and that sort of thing. I'm totally unaware of what is happening on those channels. So yeah, maybe we're getting old, buddy. We're getting old, man.
Well, that's definitely true, but that just means, you know, we just have to diversify and be more inclusive.
Indeed.
Because we kind of want to have people that are not like us in the organizations of these types of things, because yeah, they can think of stuff like TikTok or other social media channels or other ways to reach people that are not like us.
Yeah, last year for Techorama in the Netherlands, we hired a social marketing expert, and yeah, she indeed, she, of course, it's her profession then. she definitely has a lot of good ideas on reaching a different type of audience. It wasn't perfect yet, but it gave me also some insights in indeed what are people looking at these days, because like you say, we are always looking at the same thing and we always reach the same bubble of people on yeah, those social media channels, and that is definitely also part of the problem, because you have to bring the information about something that you're organizing to the people that you want to reach, and that is definitely that's part of the problem. I agree.
Interesting. So Techorama, you were just talking about already. What is Techorama and who is it for? Mm-hmm.
So Techorama is an international conference that so we have been running now here in Belgium for, apart from this year, for 7 years now. So we started it in 2014. So it was a bit of a crazy idea. So Microsoft had been running Tech Days here for many, many years. I think close to 20 years or so. I think they started in 97 or so. And wow. It was a long time event that they had been running. And so they said, we are, and a lot of people at that point were changing jobs within Microsoft. And so they said in 2013, so this is going to be the last Tech Days that we are running here in Belgium. At that point, because Peter and I and also Kevin, we said, we have been doing events for a long time. We had been running a local event, Community Day, which also reached about 500-600 people. That was a one-day free event. So we had experience already with organizing things, and we said, okay, let's try this. Let's see, because we we want to give something bigger than just the user group. So the Tech Days was the only event that people went to. It was kind of big. It was also, I think, at its peak around 2,000 people. So we said, yeah, there's definitely an audience because there's nothing here in that magnitude, in that area even, for developers, Microsoft-oriented developers. And so we said, yeah, we're going to jump in and we're going to start something new. And so that's how Techorama was born, with a name generator that created first Devorama, and then we said, oh, let's be a bit more inclusive. Let's bring everything in. So because initially it was only developers, and so yeah. That's how Techorama was born in the summer of 2013. I think it was that's when the initial ID was planted, and so we had some discussions with a lot of people to see who wanted to put some money in, because yeah, it was a bit of a risk. Was this going to work? So we started a new company for it, and we started it in May 2014. And above all expectations, we sold out the event in well before the event was taking place. So that was a smaller venue where we were doing it. I think we had 600 people attending the first year, so we put a cap on it, and we sold out, and we were like, wow, this is going well. And we had an amazing support from people here in the community. A lot of people that started helping out back then, Martin Baljo, Mike, there's a lot of people that have been in the crew helping out all these years, also loved the event like it was their baby. We had a lot of big name speakers in year one, including Richard Campbell. They joined, I think, Tim Huckabee joined the first year. So we had a fantastic lineup for a year one event. Yeah. And also a lot of the companies that were also already involved in the user group as partner also loved the idea of being able to reach a much bigger audience. And so yeah, starting year one, it was a huge success, and we ran it for 3 years in that same venue until we couldn't fit it anymore. I think we were last year was 1,000 people, but that was way too much for that small venue. And so then we said, yeah, we need to move to a bigger venue. And so in the first 3 years, it was only developers audience, because yeah, so Peter, Kevin, and myself, we're all in the developer space. So yeah. we had our contacts with speakers and that sort of thing. So we knew what to put on the agenda as well. And we also had help from other crew members a lot for composing the agenda. But then again, you start with something. So I don't know a lot of IT pro stuff, so I didn't want to include IT pro in the agenda. So we said, yeah, let's not do that. Let's stick to what we know. And so we did developer only. So the first 3 years it was dev audience, and then so when we moved to a bigger venue, we said, yeah, so this is also the time to bring back everything that that Tech Days was doing. So Tech Days had IT pro audience, had a data-oriented audience, had SharePoint. So we said, yeah, let's widen our horizons and let's bring them all back in. And so we talked to a lot of people from that community as well. And so they too were really happy that we could work on something together. And so then we jumped from 1,000 to 1,500 people in one. So in 2000, what was it? 17, I think it was. Yeah. And so last year we had over 1,800 people attending.
Wow.
150 sessions, about 100 speakers in Belgium. So it's quite an organization. And then in 2017, what is it now? Now it's 2020. How can I forget? So 2017, late 2017, I think it was already at that point, we said, yeah, we're going to take this to the Netherlands as well. And so then we announced that we were running it in October 2018, while there was still another conference running from Microsoft, so the Microsoft Tech Days. But that then stopped. And so then Techorama also came to the Netherlands, and last year, 2019, we also had 1,250 people attending. So with the same formula. Yeah. So you've been there, so you also know it's a lot of fun. We hope to run it again, of course. We will run it again. But not running this year, of course.
Now, I worked as a volunteer for the first Techorama Netherlands edition behind the scenes. And so I know kind of what is involved there in picking speakers and doing all the stuff. But it was a very successful first edition in a new country for you guys. So a new market, really, because you didn't know anybody there. What was your process to make sure that your conference would be a success in a new country?
Well, it's we always said, and you were there as well, we said the first thing that we want to do is see if the community will support it. That's also what we did in Belgium. In Belgium, we actually only, like I said, when I got the idea of starting this thing back in 2013, we sat together with a lot of people from the community that we knew. And so we said, who wants to be in on this? And when we decided we are going to the Netherlands, we said, well, we're going to the Netherlands, but only if the community, the local user groups, the local meetups are willing to back this up and are willing to help out with this, because it's not something you do on your own. I see a lot of conferences that actually have difficulties reaching people that don't have a good link with the local community. And I'm always like, yeah, those people, they know the audience. They can reach that audience to let them know about the conference that is happening. And so that's what has been our plan. Plan is basically not a good way to say it, even, because we said we're only doing this if the community is willing to be involved. And like I said, you were there as well. So we did a big meeting with all the local user groups, and we said, yeah, are you guys in? Because is this something that you also want to start supporting in a new country? Because it's turn it the way that you want. It's a financial risk for us as well. So we said, well, we're only doing this if the community is involved. And I think that is what that has helped a tremendous amount, because those are the people that basically say, well, this new thing is coming, and as a community, we are backing this up. And we also, from day one here in Belgium too, we've always organized Techorama as a large community event, and I think that still is visible today. It is not a commercially run conference. There's no we've never let any agency be getting involved into how to organize an event. We've done this only with our own experience. And of course, you learn how to run a conference, but it's been something that it still has that community spirit around it, and I think that also helps making it or giving it that cozy feeling of a large. It's large, but it's still a community conference, and that's, I think, also what the success is that we had starting from day one in the Netherlands.
Yeah, I think so too. And the clever thing, like you said, is that you leverage the audiences of the local user groups already. Mm-hmm. They have built-in audiences and built-in mailing lists and followers. And so you used those and the trust that the user groups put in your conference to get all the people to the conference, which worked very well.
Yeah, indeed. And of course, having Scott Guthrie do the opening on day one was definitely also helpful. But if no one knew that he was there, we wouldn't have had, we had 1,000 people on the first edition. And that is in a big part thanks to the community. Yeah.
So how do you get speakers? Speakers like that as well, and other speakers?
I simply mail them. the simple thing is, of course, I've been an MVP for, 14 years, and a regional director. So I know a lot of people. I do a lot of sessions at conferences myself. So in a normal year, I'm basically scouting at pretty much every conference that I go to, I'm scouting other speakers. I attend sessions. I like to learn, but I also am sitting in the audience thinking, hey, he or she would be a fantastic speaker. So I just sent them an email or I go and have a chat with them. So I'm not the only one. A lot of people from the community also help out with the agenda, and I know they do the same. We have an internal tool where we just enter let's say a big dump of speakers that we come across during the year, and we put them all together, and then at some point we reach out to those speakers and we say, well, you want to come over and have a session. It's that plus, of course, we have the open call for papers, so it's a bit of a mix. Really, we are honest in that we don't do a full blind audition or a blind call for papers. We invite speakers, and next to that we have an open call for speakers, which gives a tremendous amount of sessions and speakers that we don't know. We try to read all those call for papers, all the session submissions that are being sent in. The last one was more than 1,000 sessions that were submitted.
Wow.
So that is a huge work. Of course, I don't do that all myself. It's a group of people that we have. And so we filter through them, and we try to compose the best agenda based on, we have a set of topics that we assign a number of sessions, and then we try to fill it up. So we take the content-based approach, not the speaker-based approach. So we try to match speakers with content rather than the opposite. We invite a number of speakers, and then we have a huge pool that we can select from, and then that's how we are lucky that we have an amazing pool of talent that we quote-unquote can choose from. I know it's a bit of a luxury problem, and it's always bad the day that I have to send out let's say 900 session refusals, because some people are always disappointed, and I can't help it. But I would love to do 1,000 sessions, but that's gonna be a 3-week conference. Then I don't think people are going to be interested in that. So it's fantastic to see that you get so many people that are willing to fly from literally the other side of the world to speak at your conference. That's an amazing feeling. I'm always amazed. The weekend before the event, that I know, okay, now people are flying from pretty much every country in the world to Techorama. That's an amazing feeling. That's indescribable.
Yeah, that is amazing. And people want to speak there because it's just an amazing conference. And I think what also helps is that you usually organize it in a theater. So as a speaker, you get to speak in this big room where you have this enormous theater movie screen. And that's just an amazing speaker experience as well.
Yeah, you have the audio, you have the video, you are basically, if you're writing code on that screen, you're literally smaller than just one character. That's amazing. There's a lot of speakers that actually use pictures from Techorama as their profile picture, where you have that huge screen behind you. That is an amazing experience as a speaker, but also as an attendee, because you have good seats. You're not sitting on small chairs which are put really, really close to each other. You're sitting in comfortable seats, sometimes too comfortable, people fall asleep. That's a downside. But yeah, that happens. You have the good audio, you have the good video. That's we're lucky that we have a venue that supports that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for this year, you probably also had booked a venue, of course, but then Techorama Belgium was cancelled and the Netherlands also cancelled, right? Because
Correct.
Of COVID.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that? Like, for instance, with the venue, do you get your money back or did you pay? Did you not pay upfront? How does it work?
the good thing is, it's a bit of an inside look, but the good thing is that the venue that we use, we've been going there now for 4 years. So we know them. We know those people really well. I think we can even call them friends, the people of the venue, also the people of the catering, the AV crew. We work with them pretty much the entire year because it is not a one-off. The good thing is that we were able to cancel pretty early. Not bragging, but we already saw this thing coming in February, pretty early. We already, because it's the agenda was finished. We were selling tickets. I think we sold 750 to 800 tickets by the time we canceled the conference. But we, you start making expenses. That's true. And you start making flight bookings. You don't want to know how much those flights cost to fly in all those speakers. But so January or February is typically the, for the Belgian edition at least, the time that we book speakers, book tickets for speakers. And but because we were somehow expecting this, we were afraid to continue booking flight tickets. And we said, I think half of February, we said, we're going to pause booking tickets. And we had just booked like maybe 5 or 10. So it's still a lot of money, but it's not compared to what you typically spend on it. So we already paused booking flights for speakers. And we sat down with the venue and said, well, we're not sure that this is going to happen. And we were pretty much the first ones to say, well, this might actually go the wrong way. And so nothing actually was already paid for. The initial idea was actually moving the conference over the summer in Belgium. The original plan was doing it back-to-back with Techorama Netherlands, so that we had flown in all the speakers anyway. That was the original plan, but that would then have been in a couple of weeks. So I don't think that's that's a good plan either. So we, in that view, we were extremely lucky that we were early. And that we had no costs canceling anything apart from some flights. That is, as a company, we've been running this for a couple of years now, that we can survive. Otherwise, it would have been over and out. If this would happen a couple of weeks before the event, I've heard of other conferences, sadly, that were in a much worse position than we are. That we were where this whole thing hit, and basically a couple of weeks before the conference, we were still 3-4 months away. So we were lucky that it hit at that point. In terms of costs, we've been able to get pretty much basically make no expenses almost.
Lucky.
We're really lucky. That's really lucky. Because otherwise you can't survive this, because you can't insure. We have an insurance, but they don't. So by the time we actually wanted to put insurance in, like we do every year for cancellation and stuff, it said, but it doesn't include the pandemic. Sorry. they already knew as well. So they already knew.
You can't insure against the end of the world, right? It just doesn't work.
No. But you are insured against a lot of things. Our insurance, our event insurance, did not cover pandemics. I don't think we would have gone ahead and organized things. It like I said, we already sold several hundreds, I think between 700 and 800 tickets. That was already a lot of work to get that all arranged. And we had, I think, already 35 companies partnering. So quite a few have actually, a lot of people actually said, well, I'm going to come next year. So just use this payment for next year.
That's nice.
That's nice. I love that that a lot of people actually said, well, just keep the money. For some companies, it's just simpler because it's already part of their budgeting anyway. So we offered people to say, well, you get a refund. if you want. And so it was purely voluntarily. So we did a refund by default. But if you said, well, just keep the money and give me my ticket for next year at this price, we gave them that option. And quite a few actually did that. So more than I expected, really. Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah. Yeah. It's good to have partners like that.
Yeah, and tickets as well. So both partners and attendees. So there's already quite a few people registered for next year. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, people want to be there, and
they want to be there. Guess, yeah.
It's a very popular conference, and it usually sells out.
It does sell out. So people want
People are happy that they already have a ticket, of course.
Yeah, indeed.
So lots of these conferences and user groups are now doing virtual stuff, and I saw that you guys with the Visa user group. You're also doing a virtual event, right? And that's is that a day-long virtual event? Did I see that correctly?
It's going to be a one day, but it's so last year it was the first time we did a user group conference. It's a local conference. It's just with local speakers. Yeah. Just is not the correct word because they've also very good sessions. But so that was only an evening with I think. Three or four techs, I can't remember. Now we're going to do that. So the plan was to actually already do it starting from the afternoon and run into the evening as a full-blown in-person conference. But now we're going to do that in a virtual format. So it's also going to be indeed virtual, starting at 1 p.m. and then running into the evening. So that's the plan. That's the plan.
Well, and how can people attend something like that? Is that via Zoom or something else?
Yeah, we've been evaluating for the user group quite a few of those platforms. There's a lot of platforms now that that are making the online experience for attending a conference much more elaborate than just watching a Zoom video. We decided on using a conference tool called Pine. It looks pretty cool, and it offers a lot of interesting things that try to mimic at least what you have in the real life. So it's right. Not the you never have the networking or all the experience that you'll have in a real life conference, but it does try to mimic a couple of things. And so so we're going to try that with the user group. So it's an experiment. And so, yeah, of course, the meat of the thing is, of course, still the sessions. But there's going to be ways for people to connect with partners. So there's going to be virtual booths and that sort of thing. So I think it's the best we can do at this point. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
For everyone.
Well, but that's very good already.
Indeed.
So as we are nearing the end of this episode, can you maybe tell a bit about your course as well? Because you have a Pluralsight course about starting a user group, right?
Yeah, indeed. It's funny that you mentioned it because it's quite an old course already. Mm-hmm. I think it's like 5 years old. But yeah, those things, of course, they don't change. It's indeed a course that talks a bit about also personal experience on how to run a community, things that you have to think of before you run a session, because even a small session, a one-off session, needs to be organized well. What you have to think of finding a venue, finding a speaker, thinking of when you are organizing the thing, is there a big enough screen, is there good audio, because it's not a pleasant experience for people that they've been stuck in traffic for an hour to come to the session and then be not be able to see it because it's a tiny screen or the audio is so bad. So those are that is all in that course, and it's things that I've basically been capturing, let's say, over all these years that I've been doing this, and also smaller things, of course, we always give, for as a small example, we always give the user or the speaker, sorry, a small gift. We've been giving out custom bottles of champagne that we had made for the user group and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so we always have been doing that, and it's pleasant because it you don't have to. Like I said, we're lucky that we've been able to do that thanks to partners that help out. But it does give a little extra, and those are the things that are described in that course.
Ah, excellent. All right. I will include that course and also a link to the Visug XL day in the show notes. And obviously also a link to where people can find you, where people can find more of your Pluralsight courses as well. And thank you very much for taking the time. And we will see you all next week for another episode of Developer Weekly. Thank you for listening to another episode of Developer Weekly. Please help me to spread the word by reviewing the show on iTunes or your favorite podcast player. Also, visit www.developerweeklypodcast.com for show notes and the full transcript. And if you like to support me in making the show, please visit my Pluralsight courses and learn something new.